a big old can. Good times, unwind, falling out of love in the same dollar. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy.
Welcome back to the Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5, 35 minutes after the hour. Still to come on the program today from Alabama Today. Usual Friday guest, April Marie Fogle. Columnist Steve Flowers at the 11 o'clock hour, and State Senator Chris Elliott made some waves earlier this week. We'll talk to him about that. And if he's got any feedback, I'll be interested to hear that. So stick around. But join us now. Very grateful he can make time for us this day after Thanksgiving and come in studio. Congressman-elect, Mobile County Commissioner for now. Or not anymore.
Yeah, man, yeah. I rotated out.
Rotated out, yeah. Jerry Carl with us.
Great to be here. I'm in between jobs. I'm unemployed.
Right. I actually...
One of the few times in my life I had to separate myself from my company due to my new position. I'm no longer a county commissioner, and I'm not sworn in, so I am unemployed.
So you're just a civilian.
Isn't that good? I'm wearing a hat today.
You're just sitting in on a radio show as a civilian. Enjoy it while you can.
Oh, yeah.
You spend some time up in Washington, D.C. Any takeaways?
You know, I think D.C.'s got some great people working up there. I don't think it's as bad as all we see and hear is the real bad part. And yes, there is, but there are some good people up there that are really trying to swing stuff and change stuff and make things a little more acceptable, I should say. But D.C. is D.C. is all I can say. I spent 8 days up there and I go back Sunday. But it's they really live in a little protected world up there, and I think most of, especially the bureaucrats, have never had a real job. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. I'm just being honest. I mean, they've never dug a ditch. They've never had to jump down in a ditch, you know, on a cold morning. I used to push coal through a hopper with an air hose, and it'd be, you know, minus something degrees, and or either it'd be over 100 degrees down in that hole. But I think most of the people in D.C., I mean, they just live in such a protected world up there.
Well, tell me, have you spent much time up there before?
I've been up there enough several times with representing the county. Before I got elected, I went up there a couple of times representing some trade organizations that I was actually involved in, healthcare industry. So I understand how, you know, that part of it works. So being on this side of the fence, I hope that will a little better prepare me for it.
I know what you mean by the bureaucrat. I lived up there for 8 years, and it is – there is a elitism in any major American city where they look beyond you. But south of Potomac River, if you lived in Arlington, that was like to them living in Mexico, oddly. But there is kind of sort of that bubble like elitism that they are doing the good work for the rest of the country. You just need to go along with it out there. They're here and you're out there.
And that's true. I'm looking at the freshman class that's coming through. The majority of them are female, and boy, they are crackerjacks. I'm talking about the Republican side. There's some girls there, and pardon me, but they're much younger than I am, so I'm going to call them girls, that are just spitfires. They're business women. One of them actually owns a restaurant in Rifle, Colorado, and to work there, you have to carry a sidearm on your side. That's just part of your job title, and they really push and promote Second Amendment rights. This lady's not only a successful business person, she's also given birth to 4 children and raised a family. So she may weigh 80 pounds, maybe 90 pounds, soaking wet, and those ladies gonna give AOC a handful, I'm telling you.
Seems like you have more people like that. They bring that life experience that's more relatable to the average person, and that's what's been lacking there, I think, in the last maybe 10 years.
And I can't remember her name, but the governor from South Dakota.
Kristi Noem.
Yeah, Kristi spoke to us one night, and she said this country was starving for elected officials that were normal, just average. And I think that's what really worked to my advantage because – you know, we started as maybe a little campaign jab. You know, I'm just Jerry, but that's all I can be. I can only be myself, and that's what the elected. I think that's one of the factors that got me elected. And we see so many people, or I have in this freshman class, that fall in that same category.
Well, and you know, this this freshman class, you didn't – Republicans are going to win control, but they're heading in that direction, it seems. And McCarthy, he's gone around saying that he thinks that the margins are so thin on the Democrat side, there's so much disunity and infighting. But you guys, I don't know at this early stage if you're able to tell or not, but you seem kind of unified as a Republican caucus.
We are, yeah, and it will remain that way until we get control. And once we get control, you know how that kind of splinters up and everybody wants to take a corner. So I'm told. I haven't been there long enough to know that for a fact. But, you know, there's so many moderate Democrats that don't want to follow AOC and their agenda. They don't want to follow Nancy and her agenda. So they're kind of hung out there. Now, they do what they have to do to stay elected, but you know, you get in some of these districts that Trump and the Republicans did pretty darn well in, and they're going to start looking over their shoulder. And those are the ones we hope we can pick up that will actually work with us.
I mean, next cycle, this 2022 cycle, and let's operate on the assumption Joe Biden will be the next president. Maybe he won't be, but it seems like he's going to be. That is when you really see, and when you're in the opposition, you see the party in opposition make gains.
And that's true, but we can't take that for granted. I'm from the old school. You run two ways, unopposed or 15 points behind, and we cannot take that for granted. We've got to work hard. You know, we've got to target these moderates that are in the field that we think we can flip those seats and take control of those seats. I mean, this race in Georgia is a game changer for all of us. I've been focused on raising money for that. I committed to raise X amount of dollars just – I wasn't asked to do it, wasn't forced to do it, but just from local businesses and individuals, and I've raised about $27,000 so far. That goes directly to the candidates. We have a lot of folks from here in Mobile that have been over there knocking on doors. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. I saw last night where Black Lives Matter had started them a PAC for nothing but this Georgia race. So, I mean, it's going to be a free-for-all over there the next 45 days. I mean, it really is.
I mean, that's really, maybe when I'm talking 2022, that's putting the cart before the horse, but that's assuming you have the firewall in place to keep, you know, with the Senate, keeping anything too crazy from getting through, because if Democrats have the Senate and the House and they can eliminate the filibuster, then it'll be just a free-for-all.
Yeah, and like you said, just assuming that Biden is going to be the next president, that's the only way we can keep him and his administration in check is through the Senate. And it will also help us in the House. If Pelosi knows that she's going to have a hard time getting her agenda pushed through the Senate, it certainly helps us, you know, to hold that Senate seat. So I'm doing everything I can do, and I encourage everyone to do the same thing. If you can't do anything else, just get on the volunteer list and start making phone calls, calling people in Georgia, or, you know, again, I put some personal money together, and we sent some folks going door-to-door knocking. I think they were in Athens, Georgia, last time I checked. But it's going to be quite a turnout. It's going to be a brawl.
When you look at Georgia, it's changed politically, and then I made the mistake on this show getting out on a limb. I said, there's no way Georgia's going to go blue. That's insane. And same with Texas. And Texas was close, but, you know, Democrats have been saying those two states were on the verge of flipping for years and years and years, and now all of a sudden Georgia going for Biden, it seems. Does that seep over into Alabama in any way?
Well, the NAACP sued us here in Mobile County. Well, they wanted drive-through mailing. They wanted, I was trying to remember all the options they wanted, but they had a long list of things that they wanted the probate court judge to change here within the voting system. Drive-through is the first one that comes to mind. I think another one was the mail-in ballots. But we were able to push back on that, change it, and we virtually won everything, you know, that was asked of them. But yeah, I mean, what the Democrat Party has done, especially in this election, they have tried some ideas and some theories that if we don't figure out how to stop it today, and I don't mean it may or may not change the presidential election, but if we don't figure out how to stop it with you know, I would love to see some type of federalization of our elections, of our elected federal elections,
so not Senate, not Congress, state. And president.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll take you know, I liked John Merrill did an incredible job in Alabama. I think he's probably he should be certainly held up as doing such a great job. But you know, I understand absentee ballots. I've traveled most of my life. I have voted absentee ballots many times due to traveling. You know, the COVID is a very unusual situation, so it kind of opened up the doors, and the Democrats just beat us to death with it on the mail-in. But from a federal level, if we can set some parameters that the states have to follow for the federal election, I don't want the federal government involved in the state and local elections. That is none of their business. Those should be our and our elected leaders should be responsible for it. Let's hold them to it. But on the federal side, we've got to get some organization of how these elections are going.
Well, because then you have states playing fast and loose with the rules to benefit whoever's in charge.
And then you wind up with a very large percentage of the population doubting the entire election. Let's say Trump does turn the election. Let's say that what he's – what he's, we've got real problems then,
right,
too. Now, I want it that way. I won't back up on that, and I'm doing everything I can do to make that happen. But you know, we've got real problems with this election either way it goes. And it's because of all these questions that are out there.
I mean, isn't that the problem with whoever is president? Half the country, if it winds up being Trump or if it winds up being Biden, half the country is not going to see the election as valid. They're going to have questions. And I think if you're in that spot as commander-in-chief, it can make it very difficult to lead a country like that.
It will. You know, especially, and I'm not a Biden fan whatsoever. I don't understand. I think most people voted against Trump and not for Biden. I think that's understandable, or that's the mentality that I kind of approach it. But you know, I don't see Biden as not a leader in my opinion. He's being led. He's just a name and a face out front.
Empty vessel, it seems, in some sort.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at like all the big things. Especially progressives, they tend to have or free college education or student loan forgiveness or the Green New Deal. They're the ones with the big, giant government's, you know, policy planks. You can't get that done in this environment.
Okay, but you're talking about the free college for just a second. I mean, look at that. You know, we did government-guaranteed loans. The government should have never gotten that to start with.
Right.
Because what did that do? That caused our colleges to run rampant. I mean, they built bigger campuses. They went up
into the higher education bubble.
You go to a college graduation and you've got as many professors as you do people graduating. The last one I went to, it seemed that way. I'm sure it wasn't, but it certainly seemed that way. And I'm not picking on the colleges because the colleges are. I mean, that's a business. You know, they've got to do what's best for them. But when you get the government step involved and they give you a blank check, these are the problems you wind up with.
Yeah, but. So
we're going to forgive, you know, multi-trillion dollars of loans for what? Because the government got involved in a private sector?
And then what kind of, how does that influence behavior going forward? But if you voted for Biden hoping for any of that, any of the stuff Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders have been talking about, I mean, it's going to be, I don't see how that happens. Even if somehow the Democrats win that election or both those elections in Georgia, and Kamala Harris is the tiebreaker, getting something big like that done when just half the country doesn't see you as legitimate, it's very tough. So like I don't know if like even if Trump were to pull this off, he'd want to be in that place. Because you're going to be, it seems like whoever's president is going to be lame duck, at least until the 2022 election.
Well, I think if Trump does manage to pull it off and we do manage to keep the Senate, I mean, we as a Republican Party will be in great shape. But you know, as much as I love the Republican Party and agree with them, you know, we do need a check and balance system put in there. So, we've got to elect good people. We can't just elect suits. And you know, it's all boils down to, you know, you vote for people, hold their feet to the fire. You're not going to agree with them on every vote.
Right.
You know, you might as well get ready to hate Jerry Carl because you're not going to agree with me on every vote. But you don't know all the details either because there may be something in that package that saved 4,000 jobs in District 1, and that's what I was truly after. But you know, and at the end of the day, how's your representative representing you? Is he doing what you consider a good job? Just don't hold his feet to the fire on one vote. But I think if the president does manage to pull it off, and if we do manage to keep those two seats, I think we're going to be in great shape. But the confusion that's going to follow that and the response is a little bit scary.
Let's get a timeout in here. We'll pick it back up on the other side.
Good.
All right. Says the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may be.
Folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. But I still love rock and roll. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5, 54 minutes after the hour. Hope everyone's doing well. It is Black Friday. Keep no Black Friday stories. I'm at a loss here. But anyway, I digress. It's still sitting in the studio with us, Congressman-elect Jerry Carl. The I-10 bridge came up on Wednesday. I don't know if you listened to this program. It sounds like the Eastern Shore MPO is putting it back into TIP, and that maybe get the ball rolling on it once again. Is there, how do you feel about that? Do you feel optimistic?
Well, you know, every time I cross a bridge and I get stuck in traffic, I think about those of us that made the decision to push against the tolls, which I think was the right decision at that time. But we've got to do something. We're talking about not just the commercial side of that bridge, but also us civilians going to and from work, shopping, beach, so on and so forth. So we've got to do something on the bridge. Tolling is obviously off the table, but we're going to do something. And, I heard what my friend Chris Elliott said. Chris is a dear friend of mine, and he and I agree and disagree on a lot of things. But we can't allow our opinions. And politics is like business. You can't, when you start letting your personal opinion spill over into your job, that's when you start making some poor choices. And working with the governor or working with their staff, I mean, we don't have an option. Now you I heard the argument, you don't trust them. Well, that's what the MPOs are for. I mean, they're the check and balance system. It worked for us last time. So why would it not work this time? I mean, it is a check and balance system. So all the elected officials that sit on those MPOs, they did the job of shutting it down. Ultimately, they are the ones that shut it down in Eastern Shore. So if the Eastern Shore wants to put it back together and bring it back up and talk to the governor about it, I say hoorah. Let's move on. Let's see what we can actually do. Let's see what the options are. Because doing nothing and waiting 4 years or waiting 6 years or waiting whatever length of time until we have this administration replaced, I totally disagree with. Again, we work with a lot of people that we don't care a lot for, and I'm sure there's a lot of people work with us that don't care for us too. But that's just the daily way of doing business. And the governor, the governor has been it has been a tough road. And we'll all agree with that on this bridge project. But there's just so many moving parts has been the big problem. But everyone that crosses that bridge and gets stuck is going to be thinking of our names. I'll assure you that. So,
well, let me ask you, the hang-up on the bridge last time was just such a big bridge, and Director Cooper was, this is the only bridge that could get approved for federal dollars. Or now that you're in a federal role, do you see a way of maybe knocking down the requirement to make the bridge more feasible?
Yes. There's a lot of laws, rules, and regulations dealing with the federal government that we, the civilians, aren't aware of.
Right.
For example, to get any federal money, we have to show how this bridge or this bayway as a whole connects one community with another community. It's not just we're going to give you X amount of dollars to build a bridge. It doesn't work that way. So, we've got to slow down. We've got to downsize it. We've got to build something we can afford, and afford meaning, take the money we got now and see what kind of money we can raise and spend that and maybe do it in phases. I mean, we've been talking about this for a while. Why build it all at once? Why not build it in phases? Why not build it over a 20, 30-year period? You know, some of the improvements. We've got to move. We got to change. We have two bottlenecks on that bayway, if you think about it. The tunnel itself,
right,
and then the intersection of where you get off the causeway onto the bayway. Because where those trucks are coming up that ramp and getting into the traffic, that's where you always have traffic that gets stopped. And, of course, it backs up all the way to the tunnel. So if we could figure out a way of getting the trucks themselves off this, it would be huge. Of course, we have to take care of our commercial traffic, no doubt about that. So we've got to come up with some good alternatives.
Congressman-elect, thank you for making time for us this morning. We'll do it again real soon, but I do appreciate you coming in on a holiday intermission here.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't get to bring you your donut fix this morning.
I'll be all right.
Okay.
All right, guys, we got to get a break. We'll be right back.